Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I finally got so sick and so tired of Jerry Jones fiddling around while his Rome burns. And I tweeted this, all in my ass.
I'm relentless. Can you feel this? I'm going all in. It's time to cash in. One moment in time. Let's get at this. Be tremendous. Relentless. I'm relentless.
Here we go.
This is the Skip Bayless Show, episode 104, in honor of the very first radio gig of my career at K104, KKDA in Dallas, Fort Worth, for which I did a morning show commentary every weekday for 10 straight years with no vacations. Didn't miss a day, 10 straight years. Shout out to my guys, Tom Joyner and Chris Arnold. Love you. This, as always, is the undisputed. Everything I can't share with you during the debate show that is undisputed. Today, I will tell you everything I know about Jerry Jones, the good and the scary, scary bad about Jerry Jones. Today, I will tell you, yes, I will say this publicly, why I'd rather have Baker Mayfield than Dak Prescott. Today, I will double down on what I told you last week and got cross-examined on. LeBron ranked 9th on my all-time top 10 list. Today, I'll tell you why Aaron Rodgers is the LeBron of the NFL. And I'll answer several of your probing, provocative questions about whether I watched the Oscars or the LeBron game on at the same time, and exactly how much sleep I get on the weekends when I don't have to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. But first up, as always, it is not to be skipped. I start with one of your questions from Alex from out here in Los Angeles. Why did you tweet that? Alex, the better question is, how could I not tweet that? So this past Tuesday evening, as you probably know, I finally got so sick and so tired of Jerry Jones fiddling around while his Rome burns. And I tweeted this, all in my ass. You know what I love about Twitter, or X as it's now called? I'm a long form writer. I've written 5 books. I've written a screenplay. I've written God knows how many 5,000-word magazine articles. And in 4 very short words, a 3-letter word, a 2-letter word, a 2-letter word, and a 3-letter word, all split by that very important comma, had to have that comma, with those four little words spliced by the comma, I can quote unquote break the internet. Just check. So far, that has done that little tiny tweet 67 million impressions because I hit a nerve. Maybe I hit your nerve and your nerve and your nerve. I struck oil, fuming hot oil that Jerry Jones used to strike when he used to be the plunger that he used to be out in the oil fields of Texas and Oklahoma. I hit a gusher of emotion, piping hot emotion. Cowboy Twitter was sick and tired of Jerry Jones doing absolutely nothing in free agency, and so was I, for once. This was the same Jerry Jones whose team that he owns and operates the way no owner operates a team in the National Football League. That team gave us the single biggest playoff collapse to me in NFL history, given the circumstance, 2 seed versus 7 seed at home, 7.5 point favorite versus the NFL's youngest team. And Jerry Jones' team was down 27-0 before halftime. 27-0 before halftime. That team. So how did Jerry respond? Well, he kept his head coach, his puppet, Mike McQuandary, as I call him, that bump on a log, on a sideline log that he is. And I assume he's going to hang on to his quarterback, Dak or Duck Prescott, till death do them part. 3, 4, 5, 10, I don't know. But as Jerry arrived at the combine in Indianapolis, he issued a proclamation that he will now be all in, quote unquote, all in on transforming his team into a legit Super Bowl contender next season, next season, next season, next season. Legit Super Bowl contender, all in, said Gerald Wayne Jones Jr. So silly me, I actually, but quietly, started to believe Jerry Jones just might be all in for Derrick Henry, to give the Dallas Cowboys that bell cow back that we have not had since Zeke's first 3 years in the league, since his third year in the league when he hit the wall that he, before that, would run through. He hit it and hit it hard, just as Jerry gave him his money. And did we ever pay for that? For the next 3 years. Michael Irvin on Undisputed campaigning after that debacle of a nightmare, of a disaster, of a loss in the playoff game to Green Bay, campaigning for Derrick Henry. So I started to get my hopes up quietly. I didn't campaign on Undisputed. I didn't want to jinx it. I just thought, you know, this time, this is the one. So after I watched Baltimore sign Derrick Henry for a mere $9 million, it's guaranteed for next year, but it's only $9 million. Didn't even hit double digits. He can with incentives, but they don't count against the cap. For a mere $9 million, Derrick Henry is a Raven. and I lost it without thinking, really, without hesitation, really. I tweeted, all in my ass. Obviously aimed at Jerry. I know Jerry. I like Jerry a whole lot. Trust me, I do. From my heart, I do. I spent literally hundreds of hours around Jerry. Very gracious with his time, in part because he loves to hear himself talk about himself. Hundreds of hours for the three books I wrote on the Cowboys. God's Coach, 1989. The Boys, 1992. Hellbent, 1995. Hundreds and hundreds of hours, or at least over 100. Yet since 1995, not once has the team I grew up loving and living for since I was 10 years old, not once has my team even made it back to an NFC championship game. We're going on 30 years of that. So help me out. What's the one constant for my Dallas Cowboys over low those 30 years? Gerald Wayne Jones Jr., the owner and the operator, as in GM, of my Dallas Cowboys. I'm sorry, but Jerry Jones is what is ultimately wrong with my Dallas Cowboys. I give you this. He is the biggest reason they remain the best soap opera in all of sports, and it ain't even close. That soap opera helps drive up the price of the Dallas Cowboys to the point they're the most valuable team in the world, in all of sports, in all the world, the most valuable team, the Dallas freaking Cowboys. Jerry Jones constantly, with his two radio gigs and his post-game press conferences after every game, win, lose, or draw, he constantly creates controversy upon controversy, often for the wrong reason. But remember, I can't vote Jerry out of office. He doesn't run for owner and operator of the Cowboys. He just owns the team. I can't campaign on Undisputed for Jerry to be fired because he's not going to fire himself. He owns the freaking team. I can't do anything about Jerry having an ego bigger than the state of Texas. And I definitely can't do anything to change the fact that Jerry Jones has stubborn pride that runs all the way from Arlington, Texas, home of Jerry World, to China, to China. I am stuck with Jerry Jones, whether I like it or not. I have only one way out, and that is to become a fan of another team, which I have threatened to do. But the Dallas Cowboys are just so deeply in my blood since I was 10 years old and I attended my first game at the old Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Dallas Cowboys versus a team I loved at that time, the St. Louis Cardinals. And I saw those stars on the helmet, stars on the shoulder pads in those days, and I fell in love. It's been mostly unrequited over the last 30 years, but listen, those first 30-ish, whew, 5 Super Bowls, 7 Super Bowl appearances, first 30 years of existence for my Dallas Cowboys, we were in the NFC Championship game 16 times out of 30. That will work. Spoiled us rotten, but that will work. But now I'm stuck with Gerald Wayne Jones Jr. I'm stuck in the mud with Jerry. I want you to think about this. Since we won our last Super Bowl following the 1995 season, we are 5-13 in playoff games. 5-13. So we're, let's call it 28 years, or it feels like we're going on 30, but let's say for the last 28 years, we're 5-13 in the postseason. Of the 20 teams that have played at least 15 playoff games over that span, the Dallas Cowboys have the worst record of all 20. 5-13 is the worst. So the most valuable team in the world over the last 28 years has the worst playoff record of the 20 teams that have played at least 15 playoff games. That does not compute. That makes no sense. But that's the truth. And I want you to think even harder about this. I believe with all my heart and soul that for Jerry Jones, day one of free agency every year, every March, day one of free agency is his favorite day of the year. Why would that be? Because on day one of free agency, Jerry Jones gets more attention than anybody else in the National Football League for doing nothing. We go through this every year, Cowboy Nation. You know it, and I know it. Day one, where are you, Jerry? You asleep? Napping? Wake up, Jerry. Nothing. Day two, nothing. But it's day one. You just know Jerry's sitting back wherever he is, chuckling to himself, winking to Steve and his son, Jerry Jr., his other son. We got him. We got him. Jerry Jones deeply, stubbornly prides himself on doing nothing in free agency. Because Jerry no longer plunges. Jerry no longer buys, he drafts. Why? Does he just draft? Because he can get far more credit drafting than he can just buying the free agent apple of everybody's eyes. Instead of just buying the one free agent that everybody acknowledges is the biggest prize in free agency. That's too easy. There's not much credit there. It's just deep pockets writing a check, even though Jerry says, no check I wouldn't write to win another Super Bowl. No, that's not true. That's not true. It's about credit for Jerry. It's not about winning Super Bowls, though I'm sure he would love to. But what's more important, what he prioritizes the most, is taking credit for drafting among the best teams in the National Football League over the last dozen years. He wants to draft his own. He wants to raise his own like they're his sons. He wants to be able to tell his friends when they're out to dinner, I saw that one coming. Saw that a mile away. I knew that CD was going to be something. I knew he was going to be the best receiver in football. That's why I jumped on it as he fell in the draft. I knew that Dak Prescott, we saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I knew when he was still there in the fourth round, I had to take him, had to snatch him up at Micah Parsons. Hey, I knew it. I saw it. those foolish Eagles. They wanted to trade up and get Devontae Smith. I said, be my guest, Eagles. I'll swap with you, and I'll take Micah Parsons. Best defensive player on my board, even though there were a couple of corners that he had, Pat Surtain, J.C. Horn, above Micah, who were gone off the board. Micah was the best one left, and he lucked into Micah Parsons. Though I'm still not sure Micah is really my old Micah. Not sure he's lived up to the hype just yet. I hope he does next year, but I'm starting to wonder even about Micah. Jerry wants to brag to his friends, I picked him and I picked him. I saw him coming before anybody saw him coming. Obviously, Jerry has a sensational scouting department led by Will McClay. Number of scouts there that I've known forever. They do an all-time great job of supplying Jerry with the right information. But Jerry has final say in the draft, certainly in the first three or four rounds. Jerry has veto power. Jerry listens because I don't think Jerry knows a whole lot about these college kids until he's told a whole lot about them. I don't think he carefully watches tape. I don't think he carefully watches the games as they're played on television during the college football season or the bowl season. But he listens. And I will say this about Jerry. Of the seemingly millions of people I've known in this world, run across, covered, written about, gotten to know, Jerry just might be the luckiest of all. He's just one of those, I don't know if you remember the cartoon character Mr. Magoo, probably before your time. Look him up. It's funny. Magoo wore these thick glasses, couldn't see a thing, could walk through a burning building, embers falling all around him, unscathed, walk out the back, not even know he was in a fire. That's Jerry. Mr. Magoo of the NFL. I'm not saying he's got the Midas touch or he wouldn't be 5-13 since they last won a Super Bowl with the remnants of Jimmy Johnson's players. I take nothing away from what Barry Switzer did in 1995. It was sensational. But since then, free agency after free agency, nothing, nothing, nothing. I draft. I take credit. But wait a second, Jerry. You plunged once in free agency. It was a long time ago. Oh, yeah. It was before the 1995 season when you paid, as my man Keyshawn Johnson says, a handsome ransom for this guy named, what was his name? Sanders? Do you remember this guy, Deion Sanders? Jerry, remember that? You and Steven almost got into it, almost came to blows over how much you were going to pay for Deion. You broke your bank for that one. Wasn't that the first time you discovered that cap loophole? Where you can dole it out over 5 years so that it only counts X and Y and Z against the cap for any of the individual years. You can prorate. Remember that? You masterminded that one. And you have been a cap wizard. But your team is 5-13 since that Super Bowl in the postseason, the worst of the 20 teams that have played at least 15 playoff games. That's just wrong, Jerry. And that's on you. Because you're the constant. So, Jerry, you went and bought Deion Sanders, who was certainly worth it, greatest corner ever, not even close. And it was a double-edged sword that you swung because you took him away from the 49ers who had just won the Super Bowl by beating you in the NFC Championship game. and you added Deion Sanders to an already loaded football team, and it wasn't even a fair fight against the Steelers in that Super Bowl. But, Jerry, think about it. Was Deion not the final piece to the Super Bowl puzzle? Was he not the catalyst for you to turn back into a Super Bowl team? As you'd already been, obviously, in 92 and 93. Wasn't he the reason, or at least a reason, you lost to the 49ers? And a reason, if not the reason, you then got past that you didn't have to play the 49ers in the playoffs, but that you rose above them to win a third Super Bowl in the 1990s? Wasn't that the move of free agency? Jerry, why haven't you tried that one time since then? Is it just mere coincidence that since you went and bought Deion Sanders, you haven't even come close to winning a Super Bowl because you haven't even gotten back to an NFC championship game? You know what? This was the time, Jerry. You owed us Derrick Henry. You owed us a plunge. You owed your locker room a Derrick Henry. You owed them a message sent of, I am all in. I'm giving you exactly what you needed. I'm going to pay an arm and a leg if it takes it for those beastly legs and muscled up arms of Derrick Henry. He's a huge human. He shattered the mold. I know he's 30 years of age, and I don't care. I know the numbers weren't quite the same last year. I don't care. He is a difference maker. He is the rarest of running backs. He is the biggest, fastest, baddest running back I've ever seen. If we just go on sheer size and speed and some elusivity and lots of power, and heart and will and guts and nastiness. I don't know. I've never seen a better package. All told, I'm not saying he's the greatest running back ever. I'm just saying this is next level. This is freakish in the greatest way. This is a man who at 30 can still carry you to a Super Bowl. This was it, Jerry. This was your Super Bowl catalyst on a metallic silver platter for you. And you sniffed. And you fake yawned. And you said, let them overpay for Derrick Henry. It only costs $9 million, guaranteed for next year. But that's really the whole deal, is just $9 million. He's got a second year with incentives. He could make 10 in each of the first 2 years. But all that's guaranteed is $9 million. If he's washed, if he hits the Zeke Memorial wall, you're okay. $9 million is worth the plunge. Right, Ravens? All the Baltimore Ravens just did was, to me, win next year's Super Bowl because of Derrick Henry, because of the message you sent to your locker room, because of what he'll do for Lamar Jackson. The Ravens just won the Super Bowl. I believe the Dallas Cowboys, with Derrick Henry, would have at least gotten to the NFC Championship game for the first time in 29 years. That's what I believe. I'll go that far. At least that. He would have at least been an NFC Championship game catalyst in Dallas. After almost 30 years, Jerry Jones owed us Derrick Henry. Why do you think Dak's brother tweeted the other day, Tad, Why do you think he tweeted, and it's now clear that the Philadelphia Eagles have the best front office in all of football? Why do you think he tweeted that? Because he had heard from Dak that the Eagles did it again. They went out and got exactly what they needed. They got Saquon. I'm not the biggest Saquon fan. I do think he's overhyped and overrated for the money they gave him. Saquon's 0-10 against Dallas with only two games in 10 that went over 100 yards. And in those games, he had a 69-yard run and a 58-yard run in the other 100-yard game. Between those, it's a lot of 1- and 2-yard runs. He can't take over games the way Derrick Henry can just flat out take them over in the regular or the postseason. Just take them over. You just can't get him on the ground. He's just too big and too strong and too fast. Derrick Henry is not overrated, even at 30. But Jerry drafts. He raises sons. He'll draft a running back, second round, maybe the third round. And you watch. Watch what I'm saying right now. That running back will start for the Cowboys next year, and Jerry will gloat about it because he'll be on his rookie deal. He'll be a cheap, great buy for Jerry Jones. At Trey Benson out of Florida State, I know, I believe it's the ESPN mock, has him going to Dallas. I saw him run at the combine. He ran 4.39. He's 6'1", 223. It's pretty freakish. I love Blake Corum. He led Michigan to that championship this year. He's got some Emmitt in him. That quickness in a confined space, that balance, that da-da-da-da-da, side to side. Just can't get a grip on him. What is he, 5'8"? 205-ish, ran 4.5. I just love him. He just knows how to carry the football. But we're not talking about Derrick Henry here. No. Jerry drafts so he can tell his friends, I saw that coming. Jerry wants to tell his friends, demonstrate to his friends how much he knows football. Knowing football is a distinctly male trait or flaw. I have that trait or flaw. I learned my football from Don Shula, Bill Walsh, Tom Landry, Jimmy Johnson. I think I know more football than Keyshawn Johnson knows football. In fact, I think the biggest fallacy in sports that I've encountered in sports media is that if you played, you know football. No, not always the case. In fact, in my many years in this business, the greater you were as a player, the worse you often are at judging college talent, whether it can play or not. See Michael Jordan in Charlotte. Worst drafter ever in the history of the NBA was the greatest player ever by far in the history of the NBA. That's what I have discovered. See John Elway trying to pick a quarterback. Could pick his nose easier than he could pick a quarterback. So the other day, Keyshawn and I, speaking of, on Undisputed, we went back and forth about whether Jerry actually knows football. Keyshawn said, oh, absolutely he does. And I said, I don't know. Keyshawn said, well, he played football. Yes, he did. Pretty high level. Jerry was a starting offensive guard at Arkansas. for what became a national championship team. His road roommate was a guy named Jimmy Johnson, but only because their names fell in alphabetical order. Johnson Jones. This is just me. And all the time I spent around Jerry, I never really got the feeling that he really, really knows football. I mean, he can't even speak the lingo correctly. The words just always seem to come out weirdly wrong, out of sync, out of rhythm. It'd be like me trying to speak Italian in Rome. I would try to study it, but it just wouldn't come out right. And a Roman would immediately know I didn't really speak Italian. That's Jerry. If you really know football and you listen to Jerry speak about football, you're like, huh? It just comes across that he doesn't really get it. We got to go out there and make first downs. Huh? He always speaks in the simplest, most sort of superficial football cliches, which doesn't really come across the way you'd like to hear the man speak who runs the Cowboy drafts. Again, Jerry's a good listener. Jerry's very lucky. Might have that Midas touch. But Keyshawn says to me on air, show me another owner who knows more football than Jerry Jones. Well, you got me there, except my counter is, show me one other owner who's actually the GM of his team, who gives weekly press conferences. I mean, Al Davis is no longer with us. May he rest in peace. I knew Al well. I learned a lot of football from Al Davis, who taught Jerry everything he knows about owning and operating a football team. As Al taught Jerry in his first year in 1989, you must learn to coach the coach. That same summer, infamous quote to Vanity Fair from Jerry Jones, I could coach the shit out of this team. Pardon my language. I could coach the shit out of this team, said Jerry Jones. Jerry and Jimmy fell apart ultimately over credit. Who should get the most credit? At that point, Jimmy didn't think Jerry knew much of any football or deserved much of any credit. I gave Jerry some credit in my second book called The Boys, especially for pulling off the Charles Haley trade from San Francisco, an NFC rival that put them over the top against San Francisco in the NFC Championship game at San Francisco in 1992. But obviously, Jimmy wasn't real happy with my book, didn't think I should give Jerry much of any credit. And as you well know, Jerry fired Jimmy after he'd won back-to-back Super Bowls. Never in history had that happened. Will that ever happen again? I'm so glad they have reconnected, mended fences. So glad that Jerry was able to swallow his immense stubborn pride, put Jimmy in the ring of honor where he belonged for many years. But I'm still stuck in the ring of horror, not honor, horror. I'm in my own ring of horror. Jerry Jones is not going to swallow his considerable pride, stubborn pride, and plunge in free agency. He's just going to draft. He's going to keep Mike McCarthy, keep Dak. And my team will always be just good enough to break everyone's heart early in the playoffs. Nothing has changed. Business as usual. Another year, another lost opportunity. Congrats to the Ravens. I believe you just won the Super Bowl. But I'm all in Jerry's mud. All in Jerry's mud. Next question from James from South Carolina. Do you secretly wish the Cowboys signed Kirk Cousins to start over Dak? Obviously, I'm not the biggest Dak fan. Tried to be early on. Can't be anymore. But James, my answer to this question is no, 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 no. Kirk Cousins is a poor man's Dak. Dak is 5-1 lifetime against Kirk Cousins. At least Dak is 2-5 in the postseason. Kirk Cousins is 1-3 and off one playoff win in his career, 13 years, and coming off a torn Achilles, Kirk Cousins got $100 million guaranteed from Atlanta. That's $50 million a year for each of 2 years, guaranteed. $50 million. Derrick Henry got $9 million. Kirk Cousins, as I've said for years, is simply the most overpaid player in the history of football. At the end of this contract, he will have made $412 million. Tom Brady made $333 in 21 years, often taking hometown discounts in New England and Tampa. Never in the history of football have we ever seen a player be at the right place so many absolutely right times. Can Kirk Cousins ever play the game of negotiation? But Kirk Cousins will always let you down in the biggest moments. Think about this. Baker Mayfield played so much better last year than Kirk Cousins did. Baker got $30 million to stay in Tampa. Kirk got $50 million. A year to go to Atlanta. I don't condemn you, Falcons. I know you're desperate and you had to plunge, but while I offered congrats to Baltimore, I offer you my condolences. Think of what Baker did last year. He opened up by beating Kirk Cousins at Kirk Cousins. Week 4, he went to New Orleans against their arch rival that Brady couldn't deal with. The Saints just had Brady's number, except in that one playoff game at New Orleans. And Baker did a number on New Orleans at New Orleans. It was 26-9. And he soon went to Atlanta, division rival. Hit Kate Otten with a late clutch touchdown pass, 36 seconds left to pull that one out. Baker is remarkably clutch and does not get enough credit for it. He gets better the closer games are late. Remember at Lambeau last year? Just when you thought the Packers were taking off, Baker Mayfield played the first perfect passer rating game in the history of Lambeau Field at Lambeau. Playoff game against the Eagles, 337 yards passing. Playoff game at Detroit, 349 yards passing. I know they lost, but they hung in. Baker's stats last year were better across the board than Brady's final year in Tampa. I told you about Baker. I told you he'd be better than Sam Darnold. Now Minnesota is stuck with him. I realized Baker got beat up and couldn't connect with Odell for stretches in Cleveland. But, man, look at his rookie year. Look at the hot streak he went on to take them to a playoff win in Cleveland at Pittsburgh. And look at last year. Baker Mayfield can play. I took a lot of crap. How he's a bust. No, he's busting out in Tampa. I just love his contagious fire and desire. I know he can be a little bit, I'll just use the word that I hear so often about him, a little bit of a dick, if you will. I know he can rub people the wrong way, he can get a little full of himself, but his teammates love him. They ignite around him in ways they don't ignite for Dak Prescott. Players love to play for and with Baker, not so much with Dak. So really, James, the question you should ask me, did I secretly wish the Cowboys had signed Baker Mayfield to start over Dak? Yep. I'll admit it, I do. Right now, right here, next year, I would take Baker Mayfield over Dak Prescott. This is Jerome from New York. Not a question. I'm just in disbelief you have LeBron still at number 9. It's on my all-time top 10 list. Jerome, I am still in disbelief that you are in disbelief. I'm sorry, but you're just another blind witness, blinded by the highlights. The lights are in your eyes. The highlights are in your eyes. I'm going to say it again very quickly and succinctly. Starting with this, LeBron is a terrible free throw shooter. Certainly compared to anybody in the top 10. LeBron is a 74% free throw shooter for his career. That ranks 192nd of active players. We're talking about a point guard here, or a shooting guard, or maybe, if I stretch it, a small forward. But 74%, it's atrocious. It's shameful. I mean, the best player ever, Michael Jordan, and somebody who certainly threatened him for best player ever, Kobe, 84% free throw shooters, 10 percentage points higher than LeBron. That, over time, that's staggering. Magic, 85%. Larry Bird, I have ranked one notch ahead of LeBron, is career 89%. And I'll be nice about this. LeBron's a below-average career three-point shooter. I know he's on a hot streak right now, but that always scares me because I do like this Lakers team, because the hotter he gets, then you hit the postseason, the colder he can get, because he'll just keep on jacking them up. He's a high-volume three-point shooter. Who's a career 34%. His owner in Cleveland, after that flame out against Boston 2010, Dan Gilbert accused LeBron of quitting. You want me to move him up my top 10 list? He had the all-time meltdown, did LeBron freaking James, in that first finals with the Heatles against Dallas, games 4, 5, and 6. I'd never seen anything like it. Disqualified. Nobody above him had a flame out like that. Melted down late in game 6 against my Spurs in 2013. LeBricked the potential tying three-pointer, long rebound out to Chris Bosh, who kicked it sweetly to the corner to Ray Allen, who hit the greatest clutch shot I've ever seen that saved LeBron a finals loss. He's 4-6 in the finals. He's lost six times. 2014, got blown off the floor by my Spurs by a record finals margin. Games 3, 4, and 5, he no-showed. I don't know. I just can't get past these epic fails. One scoring title he's won. I know he's the all-time leading scorer, but one to Michael Jordan's 10, and you want me to move him up the list? I know he went over 40,000 points. Remarkable longevity record. But just because you played longer doesn't make you better, Jerome. You watch LeBron without seeing. 4-6 in the finals. And even now, last year and this year, as I carefully watch the Lakers, watch while seeing, LeBron struggles to close games. He just always has, and I'm afraid always will. And there's no way he's above 9 on my list. This is Mikey from Youngstown who asks, I think Russell Wilson is the LeBron of the NFL. Who do you think he is? Okay, I see what you're saying about Russ. Diva factor of late. But I'm going to defend him here. I don't know why. I've started to root for him. I think I was first to market saying he belongs with Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. Said it on Undisputed going back at least a week ago. I think I still haven't recovered from watching what Sean Payton did to Russell Wilson on the sideline on national TV. Screamed and screamed at him. One of the uglier displays I've had to stomach, and I like Sean a lot, but he did not like Russ. Felt stuck with Russ, and it all just came flying out when he thought Russ had audibled out of whatever play he'd called, and he let Russ have it, and Russ took it to his credit. I'm rooting for him at Pittsburgh. I think Mike Tomlin, who's not an offensive coach, obviously, will help coach Russ's confidence back to where it should be. And I think they'll be very good in the most loaded quarterback division, obviously, in all of football. But to me, the LeBron of the NFL is clearly Aaron Rodgers. He's won 4 MVPs. He's the master media manipulator on LeBron's level. I continue to see that Aaron Rodgers is the GOAT. I continue to see that and can't stomach it. He's the phony GOAT, just as LeBron is. So he did win. Aaron did that one long ago faraway Super Bowl as a road wild card team with no expectation. He caught the Steelers with Polamalu with a pulled hamstring. Ryan Clark, maybe on his last late career legs. He took advantage and he hit Greg Jennings for the game breaker. He was the MVP. Way to go. He got that long ago faraway ring. Since then, he's 8-9 as Aaron Rodgers in the postseason, and people look without seeing. It's just hard for me to fathom that as I look at Aaron's playoff flameouts that led to his departure from Green Bay, nobody seems to look and to actually see. If we go back to 2019, he went to San Francisco and lost 37-20. Not all his fault, but his QBR that day was a 23 on a scale of 0 to 100. He stunk. Then he got his first ever home NFC Championship playoff game. against Tom Brady, and he stunk late in that game, and he lost. And then he followed it up the next year, again as the one seed, and he lost in the divisional round at Lambeau to Jimmy G's 49ers. And then he ended his Green Bay saga in the final regular season game. All he had to do was to beat Detroit at home at Lambeau to get to the playoffs, and he lost. I know LeBron can be a drama king, but Aaron is all about Aaron. That should be the name of his book, All About Aaron. He always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. Obviously, he was anti-vax. He lied about it, got caught. It's the Jimmy Kimmel episode. There's the experimentation with ayahuasca. And now we hear that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been in discussions with Aaron to be his running mate, his VP candidate, on an independent presidential ticket. I don't know if it's just a publicity stunt, but I've gotten the feeling over time that Aaron would love to be in politics. He seems to have more energy and emotion for political issues than he does for playing football at this stage and age, at age 40. The reason Tom Brady lasted to 45 was he was obsessed with football. I don't get the feeling that Aaron really is. He loves playing in New York, loved being the star of Hard Knocks, heading into his first Jet season. Loved the false narrative that he could come back 6 months before anybody ever had off a torn Achilles. Baloney, but he got a lot of mileage out of it. Like LeBron, he loves the attention. He loves to manipulate media narratives about him. He's not LeBron off the field. LeBron gives so much back through I Promise, through all of his campaigning for social justice, racial justice. So they're very different in that regard. But in the end, the overrated, quote-unquote, GOAT of the NFL is Aaron Bleepin' Rodgers. This is Nate from New York. Did you watch the Oscars or LeBron against the T-Wolves? Good question. I watched both, left screen, right screen, but I focused on right screen on LeBron's game. Because I'll be the first to admit the Oscars have slowly lost me over the last 10-ish years. For about 20 straight years, I was in an Oscar pool competition. Won it a couple times by luck. Too often, the winners of late are political winners. Politics decide the winners. But I do still love the individual winners' speeches. I still often get goosebumps. They still make me cry. So as I'm watching with the sound down, as soon as an individual winner steps to the microphone to accept his or her Oscar, I turn up the sound. Robert Downey Jr. the other night, I know his acceptance speech was hip and flip, cloaked in sarcasm, but it was powerful nonetheless. And it gave me goosebumps and it brought tears to my eyes because that man has been to hell and back. That man has been to jail and back. Look at him now. So I turned up the Oscar sound only to hear a few of the individual acceptance speeches. But mostly, I watch LeBron as always. This is Jackie from Arkansas. How much do you sleep on weekends when you don't have to wake up for Undisputed? That's a good and painful question, Jackie from Arkansas, because I just don't sleep nearly enough, and it scares me over time. But I don't know how else to do this. I live for Undisputed. I give every ounce of my being every morning to Undisputed. I always used to get up at 5 a.m. in the East in Bristol, Connecticut for First Take, and in New York for First Take, which, of course, starts a half hour later than Undisputed. Gave me a half hour longer to prepare. But now I'm up at 2 a.m. sharp every single weekday because it's 5 in the East. I get 4-ish hours sleep, maybe sometimes 4.5 if I'm lucky during these upcoming NBA playoffs. I will average 3 a night, and it's just not enough. I do take an hour and a half nap every weekday afternoon. But here's what I do on the weekend. On Friday, I try to limit my nap on Friday afternoon to about an hour. I set my alarm at an hour so that I can get up sooner and get going, because I always lift weights on Friday later afternoon and get ready for date night with my wife, Ernestine, and with our Maltese, Hazel. In fact, when I take my 1 hour nap on Friday, it's the only time I let Hazel actually sleep with me. She wants to take a nap with me every day, and I have to put her out, because if I leave her in, she'll bark, or she'll hear Ernestine go in and out and jump up and wake me up, and I just can't. The only time I ever sleep is for that hour and a half. It's deep REM sleep, that hour and a half in the afternoon, because I know I don't have to get up. And then on Friday night, Ernestine, she's always waking up because I wake her up in the morning when I'm up, and especially when I'm leaving. I leave at 4, and she's always starting to get up at 4 o'clock. So she doesn't sleep enough either. So we nod off about 10-ish on Friday night, and I sleep for 12 straight hours, Friday night into Saturday, 12 straight hours. Sometimes if I'm really lucky, I don't even wake up to use the bathroom. Saturday afternoon, if it works, I try to sleep for an hour, stay on nap schedule. And then I definitely try to sleep 8 hours from Saturday night into Sunday morning. Then I'm up to run and go to church. But usually by Sunday afternoon, the fog starts to lift and I start to feel normal again. And then soon after, I'm setting my alarm for 2 a.m. That's it. Thank you for watching and or listening. Thanks to Jonathan Berger and his All-Pro team for making this show go. Thanks to Tyler Korn for producing. Please remember, Undisputed every weekday, 9:30 to noon Eastern, The Skip Bayless Show, every week.